Hello and welcome back to Spinal Cast. I'm your host, David Stevens, and joining us today are Dr. Samuel Chung and Noah Grooms. Dr. Chung is an assistant professor of bioengineering at Northeastern University in Boston, Massachusetts, and Noah is a soon-to-be graduated bioengineering PhD student who is part of Dr. Chung's lab. So, Sam, Noah, thanks so much for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having us.
So in today's episode, what I'm hoping we can kind of cover is, you know, a little bit of detail about the two of you as individuals, but also kind of discuss your research and how it kind of relates back to the SCI world or spinal cord injury as a whole. And if that sounds good to you guys, I'll just jump straight into questioning.
For sure.
All right. Perfect. So in that case, Dr. Chung or Sam, which would you prefer?
Sam's fine. We're very informal in academia, so I guess.
Okay, word. I can follow that. So Sam, in that case, what made you kind of decide to focus on SCI research?
Well, I didn't originally intend to study spinal cord injury or even regeneration of neurons at all. And my background originally is in lasers and optics.
Okay.
And in graduate school, I was part of Eric Mazur's lab at Harvard University. Eric's lab at the time was studying, was developing and using a laser that puts out very short pulses.
Okay.
And nowadays, that laser is routinely used for laser eye surgery, but back then it was relatively new. And so there are a number of groups, including Eric's, that were using that laser to perform really precise cuts in tissue, biological tissue.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of graduate school, I was interested in studying development of the animal, so how an animal grows and matures. And we're specifically focusing on how a single brain cell, a neuron, can affect development. And the laser that I mentioned can cut individual fibers of the neurons, of the brain cells. And then I could see how that worm would misbehave or misdevelop after losing that fiber.
Right.
And so as we were cutting these fibers, we were seeing them regenerating. Regrowing with very specific patterns. And those patterns match the patterns of previous regeneration experiments that were super famous in the field. And in those studies, those researchers noted the improved regeneration in the spinal cord or the central nervous system after cutting the peripheral nervous system. And so the effect is called lesion conditioning because the lesion, the cut that we make, it conditions the neuron to want to regenerate in the first place.
Interesting.
And so this is really exciting because it means that the central nervous system actually is capable of regenerating on its own without drugs and without grafting, without any additional help from the outside. And it's what we call the intrinsic ability of the neuron to regenerate.
Okay.
My results show the same lesion conditioning patterns as what people had noted before. And so really it's that single experiment that sort of put me on the path towards studying regeneration and conditioning specifically.
Okay. And just out of sheer curiosity, when you're talking about this laser that can cut individual cells at such a minute level, I'm just interested, how big is this laser? Is it like, is it a massive laser with a tiny little, you know, lens, or is it a fairly small unit that, you know, can be moved around and stuff?
Well, the one that we have in our lab is a major, a large unit. It's probably about, 3 feet by a foot or so. So it's massive. It's like probably 1,000 pounds or so.
Wow.
But there are much, much smaller lasers nowadays since the one that I bought. And now those are like laptop sized, and they can put out pulses that can, we can focus down with a what's called a microscope objective or a very powerful lens.
Yeah.
To focus it down to a really, really tiny spot. And then when we do that, we can aim that spot onto the fiber, of the neuron and then cut it with just a little bit of power, a little bit of energy.
Wow. Very cool. So Sam, given our past discussions, I know that MCPF has assisted with some of your research in the past through our grants, but mm-hmm. could you kind of tell us a little bit more about how MCPF was able to help you in your past research?
Certainly. I applied for the MCPF grant just as I was finishing my postdoc and about to start my faculty position here at Northeastern. And MCPF awarded me really our first grant that the lab got. And so hugely, hugely impactful. It really funded the lab for essentially a year and a half or so. And when I received the grant originally, I didn't even have a lab. I was just starting it up in the first place. Mm-hmm. The building that we're occupying that you can see behind me was completely empty at the time. And so using the funds from the MCPF, we set up the lab. I took on Noah as one of my first graduate students. And my lab actually, we study regeneration in a very small roundworm called C. elegans. It's about a millimeter long and actually lives in a... And so I was actually pretty surprised that a spinal cord injury foundation would actually want to fund my work, because C. elegans doesn't have a spinal cord, doesn't have a backbone, and it only has 302 neurons.
Right.
So most of the central nervous system. So it's a very simple animal.
So what makes it a, you know, a worthwhile animal for your research though?
Yeah. So C. elegans, even though it's so simple, it still has many of the same mechanisms and processes that higher animals like humans have.
Okay.
And so many of these effects that we see in humans, we can study them in C. elegans very simply. And we can do experiments much faster than we can in higher animals, like mammals, mice and rats. And so because the worm is so simple, there are also a lot of very powerful tools that we can apply that are really easy to use for manipulating the biology of the worm. And so back when we started, when MCPF funded me back in 2018, we were interested in a really broad approach called a screen. And it's a very well established approach in C. elegans. And the idea is that you can find every gene that's involved in a particular biological process.
Interesting.
And so I set up Noah, my graduate student, to run a screen, and he can describe that a little bit further, actually.
Yeah, no, I was just going to kind of jump into that. Noah, you know, it sounds like kind of the original basis of this research was around these C. elegans testing, as it were. And where has it kind of progressed since then? If you came in at kind of the beginning of this back in 2018, where has it kind of moved to now?
Yeah, so I guess originally, as Sam was saying, we started with very simple screen in order to help identify or broadly search for different genes that might be implicated in the regeneration that we study.
Okay.
So in order to see the neuron that we're cutting and watching regenerate, we're able to insert a fluorescent label. And this almost just lights up. It's like glow in the dark, kind of.
Cool.
If you want to reduce it down to that, just in that one cell that we're interested in. And so we noticed that this label brightens specifically after this conditioning effect, or if it has a higher state of regeneration.
Right.
And so the basis of our screen was essentially by using fluorescence as a proxy or an indicator of the regenerative potential of the cell. And so we just introduced random mutations by using a mutagenesis-based screen. And these mutations would introduce defects to the worm's genes randomly. And we would just look for worms that were dimmer, because in our case, a dimmer fluorescence could indicate a mutation in a gene that's involved in conditioning in this case.
Okay.
So when we would target genes that we suspect underlie conditioning, the fluorescence would often dim into an extent where it would become very difficult to actually visualize and notice these differences by eye. And so that's kind of where we leaped off from our screen approach and got into more of a broad assessment of different neurons in the worm, in this case now, just to broadly understand and characterize regeneration across several different neurons, because often in injuries to the spinal cord, it often doesn't affect just one cell.
Right.
So we're trying to broadly mimic, or more broadly understand, what's going on in this case and what different neurons can enlighten or identify and what's shared across all of them.
Got it. So just to kind of try and put it in as, you know, layman's terms as possible. You're using luminescence or as a way to kind of track the changes of individual cells after you make either, you know, a cut or an adjustment or something that would cause the worm to react. And then you're using basically the amount of light that's being illuminated to kind of help you understand how many cells are actually regenerating. Is that an accurate way of saying
it? It's pretty close. We kind of lucked out, I guess, in our original approach, because the neuron or the cell that we happened to study, it's the label that we used It would just fluctuate so much with the regeneration. And this is before we started looking at other neurons, but recently now when we study other neurons and we injure them, their fluorescence is often unaltered. And so we just happen to choose maybe the right neuron or the right label, because our label that we were using in the original cell that we studied happened to be associated with regeneration in other studies found in mammals in the past.
Oh, interesting.
And so that could be related to why this fluorescence happened to fluctuate at the time. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of like right place, right time, I guess, for us initially in our initial studies.
Got it. Well, it seems like, you know, in general, this approach to research is very specific and complex, like very little items being done in... It just feels like almost like a miniature, development. But from the workings that you've done so far and the findings that you've had, has it started to get noticed by the public? Are there other researchers who are, you know, referencing your work? How is it making an impact on kind of the research field as a whole?
Definitely. Over the past few years, we've often applied to different conferences, whether specific to our field in C. elegans or more broadly like the Society for Neuroscience. Mm-hmm. And so I actually just gave a talk at Society for Neuroscience meeting this past November. It was the first talk I was able to give.
Cool.
And we're getting some interest as well from mammalian researchers who want to replicate our results in their animals and start to see if some of the genes that we've identified that play a role in conditioned regeneration also have the same roles in mammals now.
Awesome. So based on these answers, I'm starting to get the feeling that Noah might be the brains behind the whole operation. Is that accurate?
Someone's got to do it, but what we're able to accomplish, would not be possible without those who have like worked in the field before. It's not like I just came in and started doing stuff. I've had a lot of people before me who were able to mentor me, including Sam. And I think I lucked out being here at Northeastern University and the open collaboration that we have around us, where it's very easy to find yourself engulfed in the community.
Cool.
And it honestly helps having some of the newer lab members come in too, because it really helps you take a step back from what you've been doing and try to kind of come back in with a blank slate. And they're able to help push forward new ideas or think in ways that I'm just not capable of, you know?
Yeah, I think I need to mention that Noah definitely is the key contributor here to the project, and he's definitely I can't overstate what he's done. He's really, you know, he's been in my lab for 6 years now, and he's the lead graduate student on this project the whole way through. We made it through COVID, we made it through so many challenges, you know, starting up the lab, both the wet lab and the optics room, which are separate facilities. Mm-hmm. Noah's been here for all of that, and he's really push the ideas ahead and really come up with new ideas as well himself, both in terms of his day-to-day experiments, but also conceptually. And he's come up with a lot of ideas. We've had a chance to look at some of them, but he's come up with so many ideas that we haven't had the time to look at everything.
Right.
So I can't speak more highly of him in all this. And then he's going to be defending his thesis in a few weeks and graduating. So he's actually going to be moving on to bigger and better things very, very soon.
Well, that's awesome. Well, congratulations to you, Noah. I think, from just those two responses, the thing that kind of has hit home for me, and this is true for a bunch of the researchers that we've interviewed on this show, but just how open the community is to furthering one another's research and findings. You know, Noah, you referencing all these other people trying to replicate results and, try and learn whether or not they can find new avenues to take from the findings that you created. And so I think it's really impactful for people to hear, there are researchers like you guys who are focused on such a minute scale of things. And it sounds almost so complicated that most people don't want to sit there and like try and, understand it completely. But the fact that that can be the stepping stone for so many other researchers down the road who are going to try and, further this, let alone other researchers, but yourselves included, finding new ways to take that next step further.
Yep, for sure. I mean, we're just one piece of the whole puzzle here. Mm-hmm. We're the work that we're doing is one step in many steps that we have to get through in order to restore function after a spinal cord injury. And so, it's important that we realize that we're just one part of the entire picture.
Right.
And not that there's also people supporting us who are, you know, maybe outside our field. So I have to talk about all the support staff we have here at Northeastern in our department. You know, we have other faculty who are collaborating with us and assisting us in our work.
Mm-hmm.
We have other students who work with NOAA together. We have our collaborators at nearby institutions and worldwide. We have all the administrators who are, you know, keep the lab running. So there's just many, many people involved in all this. And it's the great thing is that we have a lot of support from everyone around us. So it's been great.
Awesome. Well, kind of coming back to you, Sam, you know, it's clear that you have a lot of interest in both bioengineering and kind of the technological side of research and devices. Can you kind of give us a little bit more of an understanding about how, you know, each, I guess, a little bit more on each of those two subjects, both the bioengineering side and kind of the technical device side, but then also, you know, how do those two work together in your research? Because I think, you know, they come across as two very separate
yep.
kind of areas of thought.
Yeah, for sure. So Noah mentioned a little bit about the regeneration biology that we study, and his work is mostly focused on looking at regeneration in multiple neurons, so multiple types of neurons. So in general, regeneration studies have mostly focused on a few neurons, or so sort of like model neurons, where you perform your tests on those neurons and you expect other neurons to respond similarly.
Mm-hmm.
But it's already known that many different types of neurons can respond differently to injury by either dying or by regenerating both.
Interesting.
And one of our goals is to study regeneration in many neurons. And so Noah himself has looked at seven different neurons at this point, seven different neuron types, I should say. And they regenerate a little bit differently each, but they're both dependent. All these neurons are dependent on a couple of genes that are involved in different types of regeneration. And so Noah's been sort of teasing that apart piece by piece, very systematically, looking at two different genes and then at seven different neurons. For that effort. So it's a major effort that Noah's been doing for many years at this point.
And so is the idea then, say the, you know, the neuron that dies when it gets, you know, injured or if it has an effect to it in which it dies versus the ones that regenerate, is the goal to find out, you know, what genes are allowing those to regenerate so that theoretically you could bring those genes into the other neurons and also make them regenerate? Is that kind of the end goal, or what? How is this kind of related back to, you know, what is the achievement? What are you trying to achieve, I guess?
Right. So what we're trying to do is figure out the fundamental genetic pathway that allows for different forms of regeneration.
Okay.
And so in the worm, you can do that pretty effectively. You can look at the whole pathway. You can figure out what genes are upstream and what genes are downstream, and so we intend to tease that out, and then where certain genetic mechanisms may not be active, one goal is to look for ways to activate those mechanisms in the cells where it's not occurring right now.
Okay.
And so, yeah. So our role is mostly fundamental. I was figuring out the pathway originally. And then with that known pathway, we can then either collaborate with other people to figure out ways to impact that pathway, maybe by pharmacology like drugs,
mm-hmm.
or maybe by treatments or stimulation of the neurons in order to activate those pathways that are there, but maybe not being used.
Interesting. Very cool. Mm-hmm. Well, kind of getting back to my previous question, I think you kind of got going on the whole bioengineering side, but I feel like I cut you off before you got to the technological stuff.
And nope, that's devices. Totally fine.
So if you wanted to kind of return to that, I think that's really interesting.
Right. So my lab does research in two areas. One of them, as I was talking about, is Noah's area, which is regeneration biology.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other side is technology development. So when I started my position here at Northeastern, I was entirely focused on the regeneration biology because that's the part that's it's extremely compelling, and just there's a great need for you know treatments for nervous system injuries. But right when I started, there was another student named Yao who graduated about a year ago. And he found me at a department reception where we were supposed to be relaxing, but he made a beeline right toward me. I could see him from a distance. He came right at me. And he told me he wanted to join my lab. And at that point, I didn't even have a lab or an office.
Yeah.
And he was just so insistent on wanting to join my lab that I had to let him in. he got me reinterested in developing devices and developing technologies for our work. And so it's great because my background is originally in optics and lasers and devices. Mm-hmm. And so I have a lot of training in that area. And so it's worked out really well in the sense that we can take, we take our experience with the experiments and with the biology, knowing how that works very well. And then we can figure out what tools we need to develop in order to make those experiments faster and more effective.
Okay.
And then at the same time, after we develop the instrument feeds back on the science by allowing us to do new things and pursuing new experiments and faster experiments that we want to do but can't do.
Very cool. And the way my brain is thinking about that is, you know, we want to cut cells with a laser. We don't have a laser that can do that. We'll make a laser that can do that. That kind of idea. Of course, you know, you already have the laser in your lab, the giant laser. But, you know, theoretically, if there's a test you want to run and you think it would net you valuable results, sometimes there's not always a tool to do that out there. And so it's looking for, you know, how could we theoretically manufacture something that is able to achieve the tests that we're trying to do.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So a lot of the technology development is just envisioning what we want to do. Mm-hmm. And then making an instrument that can do that. So, I mean, currently we perform microscopy on the worms. We image through the worm at a very fine level, at a single cell level. But the problem is that we're running into is that some of the images are not very clear. Mm. So there's scattered light within the worm that interferes with our imaging. And so we end up with a blurry image of the worm instead of a nice image. And so as a result, it's difficult to see where the neuron might be or what where the regeneration might be.
Right.
But we're working on ways of improving the imaging so that we could see clearly through the entire worm and see the neuron itself in really clear detail.
Yeah. Well, and that I just know from my own experience with camera equipment, as the higher magnification you get, the more difficult that basically plane of field or field of clarity.
Yep.
It gets smaller and smaller the more magnified you get. So I can only imagine that's a very complicated problem to solve.
Yeah.
To say the least.
Yeah, very, very much so. We're right at the resolution limit of the light, in fact. So we are looking at the neuron and try to identify structures that are just, they're what's called, it's at the wavelength of the light. And so at that scale, it gets very blurry. It's not very clear what you're looking at sometimes.
Wow.
And so Yao, my previous student, who's now doing a postdoc, he figured out ways of improving the imaging so that we could see clearly the structures in the neuron and the regeneration of the neuron specifically.
Wow. Very cool. I feel like you need, one of those, NCIS Miami, where they can like take a picture and just make it clear all of a sudden on their computer, you know? Enhance that.
Yeah, it's we have to do it for real though. It's not
yeah, like, exactly. if only, right?
That's right.
I'm interested in it sounds like ever since you started your lab, you've just been progressing and just, you know, making discovery after discovery and continue to drive forward. Mm-hmm. But what are some of the, you know, challenges and hurdles that you face in doing this research and you know, trying to continue to push that envelope?
Yeah, I'm as a professor, I'm very concerned with the big picture questions. And, we do our work here, but then I'm also focused on what happens after we get our results. Mm. Because assuming that we can complete everything that we want to do, we have to look forward to the next step.
Yeah. Right?
And so what we're doing in my lab is really just the first, again, I mentioned this before, the first step of the entire sequence toward restoration of function. And so we're seeking to understand how neurons regrow in the first place, right? And the problem is many neurons do not regrow, like the ones in the central nervous system have a lot of trouble regrowing, even though they can. And if we can figure out the genetic pathway behind that, then we can activate it, turn it on, allowing the neurons to regrow. Mm. But even if we do accomplish that, let's say we're entirely successful at getting neurons to regrow, Another question is, are they regrowing in the right direction? There's no point in having a neuron grow in the wrong direction.
Right.
Not toward its target, not toward its correct target. So another researcher, it probably would not be us, would be looking into that. And there's been a lot of work done on axon guidance. So these neuron fibers, where do they go and why do they go in a specific direction as opposed to another direction?
Interesting.
And getting them to go in the right direction is crucial, obviously, for the final effect here.
Well, and I guess I wouldn't even think about, my brain naturally would think at that size, something is kind of has its path predefined. Like if it regrew, it would just regrow back to what it was, or, it doesn't, I wouldn't even think about the fact that it could grow in reverse or grow in a wrong direction. So that's a very interesting thing to kind of point out.
Yeah, actually we see that a lot in our work. Noah sees it quite a bit, because when you have regeneration, it's after the animal has fully developed. So the fibers, of the neuron, they grow in a specific time in the animal's lifespan when there are specific cues, molecular cues that allow them to know where to go and to get them to the correct targets. And so after the animal's fully developed, if there's an injury, the neuron may regrow, but it may not regrow in the right direction because those original cues that were there are no longer there.
It doesn't have the surrounding support to get it where it needs to go.
That's
similar
right.
to... It's almost like a developing fetus or something. Everything happens at a specific time, and if it doesn't, you have defects.
That's right.
or issues. So,
yeah.
Very cool. So maybe Noah, I can ask you this, and Sam, if you'd like to answer as well, that'd be great. But what is kind of one of the areas of spinal cord injury research that you're most excited about right now? It can be globally, or it can be more local to you.
Yeah. So I think kind of hitting like there's a lot of like technology out there that's really, kind of pushing the envelope forward now and kind of starting to cross that barrier where it almost feels like we're getting into that territory of getting some functional restoration to some extent. It seems to be more like mechanically based maybe right now, but we're almost like crossing that barrier to where maybe we can have a combination of these robotic support with some sort of functional restoration and guiding some of the axons to now regrow and have some sort of functional capacity. But it's still very, very, I guess, in its infancy and what's going on right now. But it's at least way ahead of anything I could envision happening right now. It almost seems like very sci-fi-ish, futuristic.
Yeah, our work is mostly focused on allowing the biology to restore the function, the intrinsic biology to restore the function. But as Noah mentioned, there's a lot of groups that do work on like brain machine interfaces. And I know the MCPF funds several people, including Drs. Cortin and Block.
Mm-hmm. We interviewed them as well.
That's right. That's right. And they're pioneers in using that technology to allow injured biology to recover function. And so that's a super exciting field because it could allow for very quick, very near term restoration of function. And maybe it might not be complete. Maybe the biology may be able to do it more completely in the future, but they can allow that more on a near term for that recovery function.
Yeah. Well, I think you both raise a good point. And to Noah's point, sometimes for people with an SCI injury, it could be a combination of the two, right? Mm-hmm. Their research might be able to return some function early following the injury. But there might be some processes that you can get started in the regeneration of cells that can, down the road, help them lessen the need for, kind of mechanical assistance in making those connections that need to be made. Well, I've got a couple more questions here, one of which is I think some people in our audience may be attuned to this if they're really close MCPF followers, but we recently started offering a grant that's focused on new investigators studying spinal cord injuries, and Dr. Chung, I know you're kind of involved in this this grant and getting it off the ground, and I'd love to hear a little bit more about how your involvement has gone.
For sure. Yeah, I was part of the team that initiated this new investigator grant. And I remember back when I started the lab and just how valuable the grant, the MCPF grant was for my lab. And it really affirmed that someone who was independent of the project found my work interesting and worth pursuing. And so I was super excited to help other people get their labs up and running as well. And so when Peter reached out to me, I was very interested in doing that. So the new investigator grant that we came up with together, it funds postdocs and new faculty who are just starting their careers. Mm-hmm. And I know MCPF has been doing this for years. And so really this grant is just formalizing what MCPF has already been doing. And so Peter was very interested in hearing from me specifically about the types of projects that the new investigator grant should aim to fund.
Right.
And we decided it'd be great to direct it toward high risk, high reward projects. And the idea here is that you can break open the field in a fundamental way by pursuing some really innovative, high risk, radical ideas that might not be possible on a typical grant. And so, earlier on in the podcast, I think we were talking about Noah being the brains of the lab, which certainly is true for sure. But more generally, I think new investigators and young scientists, they really drive some of the new ideas and the great ideas that change the world, right? One great example is the internet, which has been around for decades. People mm-hmm. might not know, actually it's been around since 1969. And it really was about 30 years until about the 1990s before it took off. And you had a whole new generation of computer scientists and engineers who could design and build the internet that we have today.
Right.
And so it took that long for a new generation to rise up and not be constrained by what the original design or architecture was.
Right.
And so I think in a very similar way, I think what MCPF is trying to do with the new investigator grant is to bring in fresh ideas, new people who can look beyond what's immediately in front of them, who are not constrained by the same hurdles that we are currently, and that they may be able to provide some hope for people who have spinal cord injury.
Yeah. Support the dreamers.
That's right. That's right.
I love it. All right. Well, I got one last question. I think I'd like to have both of you answer it. So I'm going to go ahead and have Noah start us off here. But it's a question of, as someone who might be interested in getting into this field of research, are there any pieces of advice now that you're kind of on the tail end of your PhD program? Is there any pieces of advice you would offer to people who are interested in getting into something like this?
Definitely. Yes, I've got a few points, I think. Number one, it's very important to be adaptable and moldable to your work.
Okay.
Yeah, it's very hard to prepare for everything. You can't predict everything. It's like, you never know what's going to go on. We had to go through a pandemic, all of us, you know.
Right.
But it's very easy, I think, to keep an open mind and just be willing to adjust when things may not be going well or however you anticipated. And so it's kind of like how our brain cells work. They constantly reorganize. They call it sort of brain or neuroplasticity, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So our brain cells, they're always forming new connections to their environment and interactions based off whatever they learn or experience. And I think it's kind of crucial for us to kind of have that same mindset and just kind of work how our cells work.
Yeah.
I think this is a bit harder, but it's also important to just surround yourself with people you just enjoy working with.
Yeah.
It's very easy to feel alone and isolated, I think, in this line of work. And so it's very good to just have, you know, people who just keep you motivated and keep you going, I think.
Yeah.
Our group's been very blessed with the people that we brought in. And I just couldn't imagine a better work environment to come into every day. So it's a lot harder to do, I think, that part. But once you got that going, I think you can do anything else.
Awesome. Well, what about you, Dr. Chung?
Yeah, just to echo what Noah said, I think the team that you bring around you is super important. So whenever I hire a new graduate student or take on a new undergrad, I'm very careful to make sure that they fit into the lab and they're a team player, that they're looking to grow and looking to try something new and willing to take risks as well. And so just like Noah said, surrounding yourself with people like that, having a good team, having good support staff is absolutely crucial. And I do have to mention, I think our work would not be possible if we were not working in C. elegans. A lot of people don't know this, but the worm community is phenomenal. There's a lot of very supportive faculty and students who are very interested in helping other people out. It's a very collegial, very collaborative environment. And so because of that, I think we've been able to do some of our work. And then not only that, not only the worm community, but also, you know, our department here at Northeastern has been super supportive. It's a new department, only been around for 10 years, but everyone is pitching in and helping out and really being a part of the effort. And so greatly appreciate what they've done to help keep us moving and move us forward. And then lastly, I think I should also mention the MCPF. It's been instrumental as well in providing us with the funds and then sort of cheering us on as we're going on to make these discoveries. So I do want to send my appreciation out to the MCPF also.
Well, the cheers don't stop. You guys seem to be, you know, continuing to push that envelope day after day. And, you know, that's the last question I had to ask for of you guys for today's episode. But I did want to kind of express our thanks and gratitude to both of you for being willing to come on this podcast, share a little bit about what it is that you're researching. And above all else, just for your commitment to, this process and this knowledge that's greater than yourself. And Noah, I can speak for everybody here. We're excited to see where you're going and what you'll end up doing with your brilliant mind, as it were. And, you know, we're honored to support people like you who are so passionate and clearly driven for a better future for anyone and everyone who lives around or lives with a spinal cord injury. So from everyone here at Spinalcast, thank you. And I do want to shout out to everybody who's either watching us on YouTube or listening on your favorite podcast platform. I urge you to give us a subscribe or a follow so that you know when new episodes drop. And, it's just been a real pleasure. So, Noah, Sam, thanks again.
No problem. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Awesome. Thanks.